sipping on. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping up. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping up. This is America.
Welcome to Faith Uncut, the podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
And we are in it. We are in a civil rights moment.
Yes.
The last time we spoke, we were talking about Black Lives Mattering. And this week, we're going to talk about the state our country's in, a little bit about the police conversation that we're having. And
right.
Yeah, let's get into it. So
a lot of the conversation recently has been about not so much that things obviously need to change when it comes to protecting Black lives in the street and in other environments. But now the conversation is beginning to shift. I believe that we are capable of walking and chewing gum at the same time. So as we are advocating and protesting for equality and fairness and short-term actions that will go a long way, we are beginning to have longer structural conversations about what it would mean to change some of these institutions that we're rallying against. And one of those institutions is the police. And recently, more people have begun to amplify calls to abolish the police or to defund them. So we're going to look at what that means, and we're going to try to clarify some of the terminology. We did a show last year, and well, 2 years ago, probably at this point, early 2019, if not late 2018, about being careful not to let the oppressor choose your language or let them define it for you. So we want to be able to clarify these two terms and what the aims would be under these terms so that we own our narrative, so that the narrative stays with the people. You cannot allow that which you are seeking to reform or recreate to own the narrative on how that's going to go.
But first, we are seeing some results from protests. As the protest started, I saw people in the timeline saying we're protesting and then what? And I was like, well, first, let's do first things first.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do something.
Right.
We're not just going to sit here and,
yeah,
and critique it in the beginning. So since the protests have started, we see that Black Lives Matter is being heard globally.
Yes.
People are protesting our racism internationally.
Well, anti-blackness is global. So even if we're not there, yeah, even if we, the African Americans, are not there, we have people in the diaspora who have touched every corner of this globe. And I think that the side effect of American capitalism being looked at as the leader of a system in this, you know, in this westernized world is that many other systems mimic that anti-blackness. So I'm not surprised to see people in the street.
And that's correct. Anti-blackness is not just global. It is ancient. So Aristotle, who lived in the mid 300s BCE, developed climate theory. And unlike today's climate theory, Aristotle's version of climate theory was that extreme hot or cold climates produced intellectually, physically, and morally inferior people who were ugly and lacked the capacity for freedom. He was talking about Black people. And because Aristotle was who he was trying to elevate Greeks over all peoples to include those Africans. That theory was later picked up and adopted or refined by Immanuel Kant and many others, many other philosophers, and it became part of the world's view of Black people. So we're talking about over two millennia ago. Anti-Blackness is something that is, this is two millennia ago in Rome. So, so this is definitely an international thing. What's different about America's version of anti-Blackness is it's especially sinister in that Americans have been able to get away with this by recalibrating their views of history and hiding this under policy and doing things to Black people, both overtly and covertly. And the world hasn't seen, the world doesn't look at America like America doesn't treat its Black people as unfairly as it does. And so now the covers are off. People are saying, you know, what America is actually about in terms of racism and the foundation that it was built on, that it never went back to repair. And those protests or those voices are rising up. And so we're seeing these protests because Black people are in the UK, they're discriminated against and in all parts of the world. But the American movement, as American leads culture, is still running this America's the champion of the world in anti-blackness right now. And it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But the protests are producing results. And we saw that with the NFL coming back in, reversing its stance on the protest, not necessarily Colin Kaepernick. So the players had put together a video calling out the NFL for its lack of voice on this important issue. The NFL came out the same day with a statement in support of Black Lives. This past week, Roger Goodell endorsed the signing of Colin Kaepernick, if any team wanted to sign him.
To me, it's kind of a slap in the face. What I do think, even though we're seeing a response, I think we have to put into context what that response is. Prior to the eruption of these protests, we were already in the throes of a pandemic, which was having a significant and immediate impact on our economy. We were discussing unemployment numbers that were, you know, rising to Great Depression levels or pre-Great Depression levels, understanding that this was the beginning, that as you go through, let's say, a 12-month process where you can look, you know, at rates of change over each month for a year, we anticipate that this problem was going to be very, very severe, you know, going into 2021, if not 2022. But it's a perfect storm. It's an election year. Nobody wants to be the racist. You know, it's never been cool to be the racist. You could always engage in racist behavior. It was just never been cool to be caught. So a lot of the, let's say, corporate response and even amplification on social media, I feel like on the one hand, you do have some sincerity. I honestly believe that Nike knows who has kept their doors open, you know, and who have been their standard bearers for the past 30, 40 years. And I believe it when Nike says that Black Lives Matter. Do I believe it when other companies say it so much? And there are numerous examples, but I feel like it just became something to say because you have to at least acknowledge that there's an economic aspect to lining up your corporation with your potential consumers. And people see it. So you can say anything in the first, you know, month of responding to unrest, but is that really going to show up all throughout the network of your organization? Are you going to engage in hiring more people or, you know, supporting and mentoring Black leaders into your executive suite? Like, there's so much that remains to be seen.
Yeah, we are very familiar with the phenomenon that America commoditizes Black bodies. And we are suspicious of this movement until we start to see, not of the movement, of the response to the movement.
Yeah, of the response to the movement. And
until
the
movement we start to see, until we start to see some actual changes. But we talked about the NFL. Steve Biscotti from the Baltimore Ravens actually had a really genuine statement about it that I was impressed with. The officers were arrested in the Rashad Brooks case.
Mm-hmm.
Officers were not arrested in the Breonna Taylor's death, and we're still waiting on that. We had one officer fired. Is not arrested, and she was asleep in her home. That is a clear-cut case. There's no video, but we understand what happened there.
Right.
We have
Prince George's County. Recently, the ACLU published a report regarding policing in Prince George's County and discriminatory practices, and it led to the chief stepping down this week, which is huge. Prince George's County is one of the wealthiest African-American jurisdictions in the nation, and I think it goes to show you that policing is policing regardless of the socioeconomic demographic that you are engaging with. There are some things that we are experiencing, and we know that these experiences are race-based. They don't have much to do with income. So, and I feel like that goes to really illustrate what people who do not have the means to have lawyers or to advocate for themselves or have political power to do those same things, what they could really be facing in their communities. Because Prince George's County is one of the most well-rooted, well-resourced counties, and it's still under-resourced. Mm-hmm. It's still not receiving all, you know, all that it deserves, not, you know, handouts. You know, there's this the ugliness of saying that someone is getting something that they haven't invested in or they had or that they don't deserve. It's a backslap when if anybody's familiar with that area, this is a natural byproduct of us outgrowing Washington, D.C., rooting ourselves in the next suburban county, and not all of those institutions converted to match the demographics of the people that they were serving. And not so much converting by the actual people who serve. If you're a good cop or you're a good teacher or, you know, good at what you do and you want to serve your community, that's fine. I'm saying that the culture of your organization might have to change because you can't go around treating people as if they're not worthy when they really are, or if they don't belong when they are in their homes. That's the problem. Always othering, you know, unfortunately, darker skinned black and brown people.
Yeah, T.I. recently was calling Atlanta Wakanda. And as a PG County resident, I'm like, wait a minute. If Atlanta had the resources of Prince George's County, then we could have a discussion, but PG should be in that discussion at all times because right. of the PG is black, like really black. And the resources, resources are here. Culture is here. Atlanta has culture too. It's not taking anything away from that, but you can't forget.
Not
it.
At all. But
I say that to say Prince George's County Police is not black. It's nothing like that. It does not fit the demographics of the county. Chief Stawinski was white. The chief before him, Chief McGall, was white. And it's not just you want a black police officer because you don't, I mean, police chief, because you don't want David Clark or anyone like that, but you should have a police force that is representative of the people that you're policing. And that is not the case in Prince George's County with all this money, and we demand it better. So Chief Stawinski is out in PG County. Also, the chief in Atlanta resigned, and police are protesting the charges in the Rashad Brooks case. So,
and it's not even just the Atlanta police. NYPD's FOP had a statement, about, I want to say about 10 days ago, saying that now they were being treated like animals and not being trusted, and they demand to be treated better. And it was like, wow, the shoe's on the other foot. You know, as someone who was born and raised in New York City for a majority of my life, to be from New York is to refer to NYPD as something different. You know, you can make a big deal out of gangs in the street, but we have experiences with NYPD that really go to show that the mentality is there, that there's this us against them. Not, and it might not be the same for everybody. You know, everybody instantly wants to come up and say, not all, you know, not all men, not all women, not all cops, not all this, not all that. Whatever makes you feel better. All I know is that there are people who have been made to navigate their communities who are not criminals, who have not done anything wrong, who should not be ostracized and made examples of, who are targeted for discrimination, harassment, physical intimidation, you know, attack, and all the way, you know, up to leading to death. That story does not fit everybody in the community. And this is what irks me about, you know, black lives versus all lives versus blue lives, whatever floats your boat. But if you are an All Lives Matter person, then you shouldn't even be mad that I'm talking about black lives. That is a distortion of the conversation. Blue lives do not exist.
Nope.
Blue jobs do. Blue jobs do, but not blue lives.
If you quit that job or you go on leave, your life is not blue. Your life is not
at
blue.
All.
Your blue ends when that shield goes down. Whenever we get into those conversations, I'm like, well, yeah, so, but what are we talking about? Why are we raising exceptions when we have a major problem where people are dying and we want to talk about the few people that we know? I know a few police officers that I trust with my life.
Yeah.
But they not so the ones that's showing up when I make the call. They're not the ones that's executing the traffic stop on me. So the ones that I know, I trust. I don't trust the rest of them at all. I can't. It's just because the record says that I shouldn't trust them. So that's just the way it is. We've seen the Minneapolis police, the Minneapolis City Council vote to defund the police.
Yes.
We've seen that New Jersey updated their use of force guidelines, LAPD reduced their budget, Confederate monuments are coming down. So the people that are out protesting, everyone that's been out, the work is being done. It's effective. And so
people are doing their protests on so many different ways. Right. This is what I've always said. You need people Everybody cannot protest and cannot agitate the same way, nor should they. But this is a perfect storm. I have been wondering, what is it going to take for people to be in the streets? Because there have been issues that I'm saying, wow, I'm so surprised that people were not protesting. But we had this outsized idea that we couldn't do it. We had to worry about our jobs and our bills and everything else. And one of the side effects, or one of the results of having a pandemic that put everybody in the house, that kind of separated everybody, most people, from their regular schedules or from going into their jobs as they knew to do, was that they were now home. So now you're home and you're consuming this information and you're able to act on your emotions and your thoughts on how to best solve these problems. So not only did we see protests, but we saw some that were peaceful. We did see destruction of property, but it started these conversations that are just a continuation of kind of these pulse points that have been building up. Let's say, you know, we always look to the modern example of Trayvon to Mike Brown. You know, these two killings and Tamir Rice, these three killings stood out to us because these were our children. Mm-hmm. As we began to look at, you know, again, the patterns and the incursions and the incidents between the community and the police, or how the police were treating major suspects in major crimes that were Black versus white, or, you know, other groups versus white. Now you have a more educated populace. You have a demographic now who says, I know exactly what I'm looking at. You cannot gaslight me and tell me that this is not a discriminatory practice. You cannot tell me that you are fearing for your life if the person is running away from you.
Right. They're not a threat to you at all.
You cannot say that. Exactly. You cannot say that. So over the time, we have had those advocates. We have had those people who are serving at the highest level of their effectiveness. You know, so people say, wow, where does this, you know, Benjamin Crump guy come from every time something happens? Or Lee Merritt, you know, even Sean King, as controversial as he's been, they have been consistent. So people who are able to put these stories in the media and raise the profile, we appreciate that. People who are able to swoop into the courtrooms and play chess with this system, okay? We appreciate them. That's what we should be developing, new people who can take that same line. It's the same thing with COVID. People were experiencing hardships with trying to manage their families through this pandemic crisis. We were suffering in a disproportionate rate, but it did matter. It mattered having Black nurses, Black doctors. It mattered having hospitals that were African-American community facing and understanding of how to treat those comorbidities that were making us susceptible to, you know, long-term sickness and death. All of it makes a difference. All of it comes together for this picture that says we're all going to play our part.
Right.
People are playing their part when it comes to the protesting and this policing conversation.
So whether you're protesting, whether you're putting money on people's books, their bail so they can get out, yeah, protesting, whether you're raising up organizations, it's a lot of stuff. Making signs, providing PPE for people out there. It's tons of things that people are doing to help. And Black Lives Matter is, it's in the congressional record now. Eric Stallworth, mm-hmm, it just tried to get Republicans to say it this week and they couldn't say it. But Black Lives Matter is the least we can do. It is the bare minimum.
Yeah.
It is the lowest bar we can set.
Yeah, but that's just like the signs in the 60s that said, I am a man.
Right.
Clearly you are. Right. Clearly you are, but you still, your protest sign said, I am a man. So Black Lives Matter is the simplest common denominator. It's the simplest way to say, please stop, you know, or see me.
Right. So if you think about the how ridiculous it is that it took this long for the country to kind of agree that Black Lives Matter, like that's like really, we were really bad as a country if we couldn't even say that Black lives matter, because we're saying that Black lives don't matter if we're not saying that. So the fact that we couldn't say that, we've been saying Black lives don't matter so long that now we're at the bare minimum, but Black people are not stopping at we matter, and neither should anyone else. Yes, we matter.
Right.
That's the easy part, but
right,
equity is the hard part.
Yeah.
Do we matter enough for it to cost you something? Or do we matter enough to place us in positions that aren't just the chief of diversity.
Right.
Do we matter enough that we can show up and you not be afraid?
Yeah, or that we don't pay an outsized amount for your intimidation by our presence. So many things. So us mattering, we're clear that we matter. And again, I think it's a palatable phrase that sums it all up, that regardless of what we are bringing to the table, developing in our communities, what we have going on inside of ourselves, what we create with our hands, what we create with our minds, all of that is of value. So when we're saying Black Lives Matter, we're really saying Black lives are of value, meaning they should not be something that are mindlessly wasted due to that's how it's always been. And I feel like when we talk about policing, this conversation always gets convoluted because America's history is ugly. It's ugly. And at every turn, anybody who knows about history tells you, watch how you treat people, because the historical record is not going to be kind to you. Okay. So we have now a historical record that has been manipulated because people demanded that the historical record be as kind to some evil acts and evil acting people as their, let's say, their desire was, right? So a good example is Thomas Jefferson. You know, his descendants went all the way to the left to act like he wasn't who he was. He's exactly who he was. He participated in all aspects of slaving, okay, up to and including siring slave children that were not freed as soon as they were born, okay? Up to and including keeping a slave concubine who was not freed on the occasion of his death. So she died a slave. So there's nothing romantic about that. There's nothing to be misunderstood about the true nature of that relationship. But I'm talking about into the 2000s. You have people who want the historical record to just be a little bit more gentle with him because he did write the Declaration of Independence. He was the third president. He was a founding father. So the historical record is not going to do that. The historical record, when it's treated with the respect it deserves, it's just simply going to tell your story. Increasingly, these stories are being told and people who previously controlled this narrative no longer control it. One of the stories that we don't really like to develop and tell about is where did some of these modern policing practices come from? And it is no secret. So it should not be treated as controversial. We should not be arguing about it. A lot of what has become modern policing is rooted in slave patrolling. Mm-hmm. Period. And when you root something so important to the community in that, where now you stick out because the color of your skin says that whatever you up to ain't right. You walking on this road, that's gotta be a criminal act. Let me see your papers. Let me see your papers. Let me see what gives you the right to be out here walking and breathing freely. So these types of impulses to have high contact with law enforcement, they're rooted in something else. And even over time, people in the North would say, but we didn't have slaves. No, you had a lot of people who were escaping slavery. You had free Black communities that were thriving. At the Great Migration, you had Black communities that were taking root. And you know what you had? You had a problem. You perceived that you inherited a problem. So as policing in your communities and in your states comes to, into formation, you develop a new narrative. You say, not only are you serving the community, but now I bestow upon you heroism for going to work. You're a hero. You're a hero no matter what you do. And really, that has kind of perverted our idea of what it means to be a police officer, what it really means to protect and serve, what it means to engage with the community. All of these things have to be put on their right side because it has been distorted, and it hasn't been distorted for the benefit of the people who are being policed. It's only been distorted for the organizations, for the higher ups, for, let's say, the frontline police officers who, understanding that not so much what can I do for you, but how much can I do before I get in trouble for doing it? There are people who are bad actors who are doing their jobs with these types of ideas in their head, and they're really forcing the question about are we getting what our taxpayer dollars are paying for when we say that we have a responsive and attentive and a community oriented police force? Overwhelmingly, the answer is no.
Black people definitely aren't getting anything for this because, as you pointed out, the police departments find their root in the slave patrols. And between slave patrols and what we have now, we have a period where slaves were freed. And what we saw was a protracted period of lynching. And during that period of lynching, Black people couldn't look to police for help. These were mobs who would make a spectacle of killing Black people. So one of the most famous cases in Florida, Claude Neal, was a 23-year-old man who was in a relationship with a white woman. And he was suspected of killing her. Now, she came up dead. They said that he did it. The mob got together and wanted to get Claude Neal. And so they got him. The police chief in Escambia, Florida, said he didn't want to deal with it. So he actually drove Neal out of the county. The mob found out where he was, tracked him down. They strung him up by a tree. They would cut off pieces of his body and feed it to him. Then they would let him down and make him say it was delicious. They put him back up on the tree, repeat it. Eventually, the mob had all gathered. They had a flyer for this. It was supposed to start at 8 p.m. so everyone could come and see. And they did this. They did this to him, this torture. And then eventually they took him out to the woods and killed him. And later they found out that the family of the white woman, Lola Kennedy, who was killed, they killed her because they were upset that she was dating a Black man. And so the police chief did not help. And for all of those lynch mobs, the police chiefs did not help Black people.
They did not help them. Sometimes they stood aside and let these mobs run into their jails to collect their victims. And then let's just tell the truth. There's always been a concern that if you let that type of mob violence, that type of, for lack of a better term, that white rage to go unchecked, you're going to get to a point where the police are a part of that mob. That is evident in many of those lynching examples, that the reason why they didn't help is because, golly, they were there and they were participating, because at the time, the social culture, as well as the culture of the organization, said nothing wrong is happening here anyway. You don't just change that. That does not change just because we get a Civil Rights Act in 64. What is that? Voting rights in 64 or civil rights in 65. That doesn't just change.
So it makes sense that we see the rise of Black Lives Matter as a clarion call. We also see this call to defund the police, because the police as an entity has never been for Black people. It's not that we don't benefit in spots from police, but as a body, Black people avoid the police.
Yeah.
If something happens in my neighborhood, my first call isn't to the police. It's what can I do to help resolve this? What neighbor do I need to reach out to? Do I need to go talk directly to someone? But I don't want to bring the police in here, because then it's out of control.
Well, I mean, you have an example last week in, I think, Spotsylvania County in Virginia. A man who he owns rental property. He was serving eviction notices, and five members of a family who were white attacked him and threatened his life. And he was licensed to carry and pulled his gun. And he had also called the police. He's a minister. And when the police arrived, they arrested him for brandishing his gun. They left the scene. They let the people go. Then they had to go back and arrest the five members of that family for, yes, attacking that man, but not before they ostracized him, embarrassed him, denigrated him by arresting him when he was the person calling for help, leaving those white people to say, you know, told you nothing was going to happen to us. Even if something eventually happened, that eventual part is what really puts the salt in the wound. Furthermore, when we're talking about defunding the police, there's nuance here. It's not so much that the police, you know, they're not monolithic. There are departments that are getting it right, that want to, want to improve in what it means to serve their community. They don't want to be the boogeyman. They don't want to be the face of something to fear in their community. They want to be respected. Respect and fear is not the same thing. But you do have departments where you have bad behavior and it's entrenched. The standouts, Baltimore City's police, Chicago's police, New York City, LA's police, you know, that was an officer in Dallas who attacked Botham Jean in his home, in his home, saying that she mistaked it for her home. And while we were very happy, you know, or appreciative, I don't want to make it seem like we were happy. We were appreciative of her getting convicted for the crime that she committed. But look at all the steps they took that don't match any other way they treated any other criminal arrested for possible, you know, for manslaughter, if not murder.
Yeah, she took his life. She got 10 years. So we get 10 years for much lesser infractions.
Absolutely.
So first, let's clarify this language, because in this conversation, I've seen people, intelligent people, suddenly act like they don't know what words mean. Defunding the police. You have to think about that in terms of recent efforts to defund social programs, educational programs, and things like that. So
exactly.
When people hear defund the police, they think pull all of the funding from the police so that the police no longer exist. And
which makes no sense.
That's not what's being called for. What's being called for is reduce the funding of the police so that you can divert that funding to other programs that are more beneficial. You have police showing up to things that they should not be showing up to. And that's the case with Rashad Brooks. The police should not have been called for a person sleeping in their vehicle. You call a tow truck for that. You call a substance abuse counselor for that. Or someone there. Like, there's people that you can call for that are not the police. Defunding the police.
Or they should be.
Yeah, right. So defunding the police is no different than when people try to defund Planned Parenthood, or the fact that they've been defunding education systemically over the past few decades. Education hasn't gone away, and it's been defunded. Defunding the police, we need to understand what we mean when we say that. We do not mean get rid of the police entirely. But Black people have seen the police act as a personal security force for white people and serve Black people. So when we say Black Lives Matter, are we saying Black Lives Matter enough for you to get rid of your personal security force or to boost the funding for your personal security force so we can actually get some help in these other areas that we need? Do you think Black Lives Matter that much?
Right. And the nuance here is that, and now here's where Black Lives Matter will probably be on the front line, but as with most civil rights legislation or most pushes into equity, we bring everybody with us. So we're saying Black Lives Matter, and we're saying that, you know, defunding the police moves resources to other places where it will be more helpful to members of the community. But that will benefit people who experience negative policing situations due to language barriers, because now when you move funds from, let's say, overtime lines, budget lines, and move them into recruitment lines, because getting frustrated with trying to serve your constituent or being overly concerned with whether or not that constituent is here legally or illegally when they're a victim of crime, you just need a Spanish speaking or an Italian speaking or a French speaking or a Chinese speaking or a Vietnamese speaking, any other language speaking person to assist you with serving that member of the community. You don't need a gun. You don't need brute force. You definitely don't need all this military equipment that has been going between the federal and the state and local levels. I won't say unchecked, but see, programs have been discontinued because we knew maybe that's not the best image that we want of the police in our immediate community. You know, riding down the street in tanks, boasting military grade artillery. For what? What are you getting ready? Who are you getting ready to use it against? So we have people who make the argument on the other side. No, the police need every dollar. Okay, seriously? If you're looking at their organizations from an organizational development standpoint, you can continue to spend money. And you can continue to say, you know, if you say that your city's budget or your state's policing budget is $500 million and $100 million of that is dedicated to overtime costs because you're having problems on recruitment, it takes political will and leadership to go ahead and solve the real problem. The real problem is that you're having recruitment issues. You might be having recruitment issues because people misunderstand what it means to be a police officer. They don't know the benefits of what it would mean to serve as a police officer. There might be a negative connotation to having the occupation of police officer. So you can put money into actually solving your problem. So defunding sometimes looks like just cutting the pie differently.
Yes. So let's look at the, so I pulled some police department budgets. So for Philly Police Department, the budget is $760 million.
Mm-hmm.
For Houston, Houston is an enormous city. The budget is $964 million. For,
that's almost a billion, that's almost dollars, y'all.
And if we go to Chicago, it's $1.7 billion. LA, $1.7 billion. New York, $6 billion. Are we saying that we can't pull funding from these police departments to actually implement some programs that would force us to not have to call the police as much? Like they would alleviate the strain on the police department if we had services in place. See, the defund call plays on this fear. And I've seen this fear in all of the coverage. And that is, if you get rid of the police, who am I going to call when someone breaks into my house? Okay, you are failing to understand or even interrogate, why is that person breaking into your house?
All right.
So do you think that's their first time breaking into a house? No. They've broken into a house before, and now they back for your house. And chances are, when they broke into a house before, they were caught, they were policed, and here they are breaking into your house again.
Because we didn't solve the root problem.
The police are not effective in deterring that. They are a response unit. So how about we take the funding and figure out why that person is breaking into your house? Maybe they have a housing issue. Maybe they have a mental health issue. Maybe they have a family support issue. We don't know because we haven't asked the question, because police is the first response for people. And that fear of not having that personal security force has derailed this conversation. And so we can't even see what it is that we're actually talking about anymore. We're talking about reducing funding and diverting that to other programs that would be beneficial for all of society.
Basically, I mean, let's look at, you know, we talk about video evidence, give you the quote fingers. And what the videos have shown us is that people definitely, most definitely, I'm talking about average people, are most definitely using the police to do their dirty work. And if I was an officer, I would not want to be called into an otherwise peaceful yet irritating situation. Oh, you don't like what I said to you, but you called the police on that person. And you did it full well knowing that maybe the person that you were having a disagreement with, 9 times out of 10 is going to have an even more disagreeable experience with the police that you've called. So we're seeing people misuse the police. So if we say that if we say that a call like Amy Cooper's from last month in Central Park, where someone had asked her to put her dog on the leash, just like the signs posted had asked her to do it, and she decided that being personally asked to follow rules was an incursion, was somehow an intimidation or harassment. What we were able to see on that video that was, you know, I'm so glad that the person caught it, was that intentionally Ms. Cooper called the police and used her limited knowledge of how the police might interact with an African-American male to escalate her call to the point where he could have been dealt with lethally.
Right.
He's bothering me. He's doing these things. There are so many videos of this. To your example from earlier about Mr. Neal, it's the same thing. In this instance, you have a family that basically performed an honor killing because they didn't like who the daughter was, you know, dealing with, sleeping with, or loving. But if you look at even the example of The Godfather of Harlem, the show that was out last year with Forest Whitaker, long story short, one of the mob boss's daughters was dating a black musician. Mm-hmm. At every turn, his life was in danger, either between the mob or the weaponization of the police, because he had a black body. This is, you know, set in the The '50s. Okay, so mid 20th century, but he was at risk on both sides. There would have been no relief, right? His only relief or the only understanding were who was it who could equally and opposite meet the energy of the mob boss on the criminal side in the street to say, you can and you cannot behave with these people in my community. That wasn't a police action. At some point, the main character of that show, Bumpy Johnson, did not want to be tied up with the police too much either, you know, but it was always a chess game because it's like they're here, but who's going to use them for what purpose? So there are examples of misuse of the police. And what I'm saying is, at some point, you know, people would be fired. If you were a budget officer and you were given $1 million as a budget and every year you overspent your budget, people would say, you're not good at your job. You are not managing the funds well, right? So in a situation where we are constantly paying in, your property taxes are going up, sales taxes are going up, you know, income taxes are going up. You're not even getting back the refunds that you want. You have this 2017 Tax Act, all this stuff. People are getting, you know, at every turn, someone's taking another nickel, another dime, another nickel. Be an intelligent consumer and say, what the hell am I getting for this money? What am I getting for this? So when you really say that, when you say, wow, locally, our police budget, like I said, just using an imaginary figure, is $500 million, but $100 million of it has to do with the fact that you don't feel like fixing your recruitment practices, or of all the hires that you could conduct, you don't want to hire mental health advocates. You continuously want to go into dangerous situations with people who are having medical emergencies and run the risk of ending their life prematurely because you don't have any other apparatus to solve the problem? Are we going to keep doing that? That is an intelligent and intentional conversation, especially when you see the rise of other situations, especially when you can look at what has been, like we said, defunded over time. We don't have the same mental health apparatus that we had 40 years ago. We do not even have, there used to be hospitals for people to go to when they were having, albeit it might not have even been the best care, but we used to have resources for people who needed help and not to be arrested. We don't have that anymore. We used to have community centers and youth programs and youth job programs. We come up with all different reasons why we can't give people what they really need. But every time we turn around, let it be the police saying we need another 100 million. We need another 200 million. They get what they need or they get what they ask for. I don't know that it's always what they need. And for those departments that have started to reform or have started to look at, you know, how to improve their practices, they are running into the resistance internally. They're running into resistance from people who say, we've been doing it this way. This is how I like to do it. And I don't like you trying to change it. Now you tell me.
So when we have the conversation about Black Lives Matter, like, this is going to cost you something other than being out protesting. In the street, protesting does cost something, but for Black lives to actually matter equally, you want to pay. You want to pay something. You want to pay once to get rid of that force. Yep. You want to pay again when those tax dollars are diverted to something helpful. You're going to have to pay again when you have to go out and interact with your neighbors as human beings instead of calling the police because they annoy you.
Mm-hmm. Or because you're not getting your way.
Black people aren't just calling police like that. Spanish-speaking Americans, immigrants, and residents, they're not just calling the police every time they don't like something. They not get out all. And deal with people. You deal with other human beings as human beings. So for Black lives to matter, it's going to cost you the effort of looking at other people that don't look like you as human beings too.
Mm-hmm.
Is America ready to pay that? Are they ready to pay the cost for Black lives to matter just as much as everyone else's life?
Mm-hmm.
So whether that's coming from defunding the police, increasing funding for education and social services and mental health services, housing services,
housing services, job services, job development activities, increasing access to support services. So food programs, childcare programs, community cleanup programs. There are so many things that we could use these funds for that would actually impact the environment in which people are being made to live, the environment in which they are making decisions that sometimes don't lead to the best outcomes. If we change the environment, eventually you're going to change the people within the environment, but it's intentional. That doesn't happen by accident. And it definitely doesn't happen just from, you know, let's say one march or one post or, you know, one kind act. These things are important, but they have to be taken all together. So this is what I'm saying about people being resilient. I am so excited to see that people are being consistent and that they are not shirking away from the courage that it takes to stand up for yourself and demand better. Okay. You shouldn't have to, but this is a system that makes you have to do it. And I'm proud of everyone who is doing that. But let's make sure that we maintain and affirm the value of such bravery. Okay. In the face of intractable, you don't want to say hatred, but just disregard. For every one person who cares, there's maybe two more who don't, you know, somebody who says it's not my problem. So I appreciate people standing up, but we have to be able to have intelligent conversations. And the conversation around defunding the police has to do with, are the police providing the level of service for you for what you're paying? Now, if I can go into a restaurant and, you know, argue or not be satisfied with my meal, okay, and a manager understand that they have failed in their mission between organization and customer. You know, I'm investing in having a good meal, and your end of my investment is that you're going to provide it. And that has not happened. And now we have to figure out, you know, how best to make this happen. It is not at that time that I want that restaurant worker or that manager of that restaurant to look at me and say, but that's how it's always been. And even if you come back, I'm going to charge you $2 extra, get the same bullshit meal. I don't want it. So if I push back and I say I need more, or I need the quality to match what I've paid for it, I think that is a well-deserved conversation, because we're paying too much. If at the end of the day, even the settlements come out of taxpayer funds, you mean I paid you all that money to be mediocre? You mean I paid for that from the very beginning to the very end? And in that same year, my property taxes went up. I have to pay for more things, for my student who's in school because the school funding went down. You have the audacity to build another jail when we need more classrooms. You have the audacity to build a juvenile jail when we need a juvenile mental health center. That's what you did? You gonna play in my face like that? And that's what I'm saying about the tenor of what is happening right now. People are way too informed. They understand very clearly what it ain't, okay? We're trying to have constructive conversations about what it is or what it should be. But this idea that these organizations can be, you know, stoic in the face of the unrest and the change that is barreling toward them, that can't be sustained. Somebody has to lead. We do not enjoy that leadership at the federal executive level. We ain't got it. So now what are we going to do? What is going to happen?
We should be praying for the people who are just waking up to this reality, that this equity, because I'm not talking to people, black people, we know. Like, we've been fighting this fight for our lives, our parents' lives, grandparents, and the lives of all our ancestors. This is not new to us. And if this were to stop, we would just go back to being mad like we were every day about this. So I don't, it's not healthy for us, but I don't doubt that black people have the stamina to continue to fight, because the alternative is to not fight and still be aware of everything that's going on. So I do pray for the people who are just understanding what this is, because this is an old problem. This is an ancient problem. And this is something that's going to take a lot of stamina and energy and fortitude and commitment and sacrifice. And we will see how much people really think Black Lives Matter. And when we say Black Lives, we lift up all of these lives. Breonna Taylor, Rashad Brooks. Ooh. We lift up Rhea Milton in Ohio, trans woman who was killed, Dominique Fells in Philly, Tony McDade in Tallahassee, Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd. All of these lives matter. And so, as we're fighting, drink your Gatorade, because this is going to be a long one.
It's going to be a long summer, y'all.
For Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.